I'm Brian Barrett. We're back here on News Radio WGNS, and one of my favorite topics every year to talk about is the Old Farmer's Almanac. And I'm sure, like you and me, when we think about the almanac, we're looking at the winter weather forecast, because this comes out, you know, in the fall. But there are all many great things in the Old Farmer's Almanac, which has been around since 1792. We have Sarah Peralt, managing editor, joining us. And Sarah, you haven't been around that long, obviously, but you've been there a long time.
Yeah, not quite 233 years. I've been here for a mere 21 years.
21 years. That's a long time to do anything. But am I right in saying that when people think of the almanac, the first thing that comes to mind is the weather predictions?
Yes, I could be like out somewhere meeting a new person and they'll say, "What do you do?" And I say, "Oh, I work for the Old Farmer's Almanac." "Oh, what's the weather?"
And yeah, you're supposed to know it right then too, right?
Yeah, and it's hard when the book has just come out and I don't have everything memorized yet. And I'll say, "I think."
Well, what I have always liked about it is, you know, weathermen get a bad rap, I think. It's very hard to do predicting weather and forecasting and things of that nature. But whatever formula the Old Farmer's Almanac has, you have a very good track record, I would say.
Oh, we do. And well, you know, tried and true. We've been using the same formula since 1792. And we do traditionally have an 80% accuracy rate. There are years we're slightly above or slightly below, but it always bounces out to be right around 80.
Well, that is good to know. Well, why don't we start with some other things that are in, and we'll keep people kind of hooked in here to give them the forecast in a moment. But there are recipes, they're just really great articles. So what are some of the highlights outside of the weather that are in the Farmer's Almanac?
A lot of us, or a lot of people know us for gardening as well as weather. So we've always got great gardening information, whether just getting the almanac to get the charts, because people garden by the moon and we've got those charts. They garden obviously by seasons and weather. So we have those charts. And now always some fun and inspiring stories. This year we've got a tale about tomatoes and how they came to be more accepted. As we know, previously they were thought to be poisonous, and how it came from being something that people described as an offensive fungus to the most widely eaten vegetable or fruit. That's another thing to talk about that we have today. And we'll also tell you how to cheat your gardening zone. So if you live in the north and you want to grow something that you can only find in the south, we're going to teach you how to do that. Or vice versa. If you're in the south and you want to grow something like lilacs or tulips, which is something I grow here in the northeast without any issue, we'll tell you how to do that.
Oh, well, that's very cool. Yeah, tomatoes, they're kind of a controversial thing. Not only is it a fruit, is it a vegetable, but there are people who love tomatoes and then there are tomato haters out there. So, but I really didn't know that initially it was thought to be, they called it what, a smelly berry?
An offensive fungus.
Offensive fungus. That is a way to look at it. So once thought as this offensive fungus is now, like you said, the most widely used and favorite vegetable in America. There is a story in there, too, about a little Canadian history. Can you share a little bit about that?
Oh, right. So maybe everyone doesn't know that while we think of baseball as America's sport, it started in Canada. So it roots back to 1838. There was a game played in Beachville, Ontario, that someone was watching and then wrote an account of. So it's the first recorded history of an organized baseball game. The oldest baseball park in operation is located in Ontario. It's Labatt Memorial Park. Babe Ruth's first professional home run was hit at a stadium in Toronto. And Jackie Robinson played his only minor league season in Montreal. So We may think it's an all-American sport, but it has a lot to do with Canada.
Apparently so. I was really fascinated when I read the almanac in the copy that I got before the interview about that. So that was one of the interviews I or one of the articles I did take a look at. And also are there, you kind of look at astrological things and space and all that, and there's something in there about, and you'll have to refresh my memory, but about meteors or asteroids maybe coming toward Earth.
Right, so there's an asteroid called Bennu. It was discovered in 1999. It's basically it's about 500 meters wide, and it's a collection of space debris. So it's basically trash going through the atmosphere, and it's on a collision course with Earth in 2182. So it's possible that something will happen. It'll break up. It'll get smaller by the time 2182 arrives. You and I won't know. But that's what they're stating now.
2182. Yeah, boy, I don't even want to try to figure out what my age would be at that point. The Old Farmer's Almanac managing editor Sarah Perrault is joining us today as we talk about this year's edition of the Old Farmer's Almanac. It's always surprised me, and I usually try to at least make one of the recipes that are in the almanac. Are there any interesting ones in there, or one that caught your eye this time?
We always have a recipe contest every year, but along with the recipe contest this year, we have an article about a colonial favorite. So if you're into retro, fairy butter was very popular in colonial times. And in this day and age, when everybody's trying to make the most beautiful food and taking pictures of it and posting it to social media, fairy butter is a very attractive looking butter. It's very easy to make. You can use it on, I would say, using it on sweet treats, like you would want to put it on the gingerbread or scones or something like that. So we've got a little bit of the history, why it's called fairy butter, how you can make it. And then if you wanted to try one of the recipes from our recipe contest that won last year, first place went to red, white, and blueberry cheesecake squares. We did ask last year for people to send us their best holiday recipes. So that one was for 4th of July. My favorite took second place, and that one was maple roasted butternut squash pudding cakes. Sounds like a hard recipe to make, really wasn't. I made that one. It was great. And so this year we're asking people to send us their best recipes using tomatoes.
Oh,
That
okay.
offensive fungus, we're asking you to send in your best recipe.
The butternut squash recipe, is that more of a dessert, or is it like a side dish?
It's like a savory side. It's like a souffle, and it's just slightly sweet, but it was amazing.
Wow.
I wanted it to win first place, but we do all vote, and it got second.
Well, it's still maybe one to try. So check out the Old Farmer's Almanac for the recipes and all kinds of interesting articles. If you're a cat lover or trying to understand cats, there's even an article in there for those who want to try to know their feline friend a little better.
Aren't we all trying to figure out cats?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have some explanations on why they do some of the things that they do, such as kneading, or some people call it making biscuits when they're kneading on a blanket or on a person. Why they are sometimes sitting around with their tongue kind of half hanging out, half hanging in. And then we get a little bit more into the fact that the effect that catnip has on cats. And we learned that only two-thirds of cats have catnip receptors. So you may have a cat that catnip doesn't affect it. That hasn't been my experience, but.
Yeah, the you're right about that for sure. One other thing that I'd like to touch on, because I thought it was very interesting, you go into detail about how to give the perfect hug.
Okay, so now we all stepped away from hugging for a little bit. We'll just say 4 years ago when something happened. And now we're encouraging, it's really good for you. If you hug someone that you're close with, a supportive partner or parent or a friend, for 20 seconds, it releases oxytocin, which makes you feel more relaxed. So if you are going to do a speech and you're really nervous about it, go find someone, get your 10 second, 10 to 20 second hug, and it'll relax you. We found the most enjoyable length of a hug is 5 to 10 seconds, though the average hug only lasts 3 seconds.
Interesting. So I'm not, I've never been much of a hugger, but maybe I should be. Can release some
You need
tension.
to lower your stress.
Well, I could definitely go with that. So we're talking with Sarah Perrault, the managing editor of the Old Farmer's Almanac. So now's the time. Drum roll for the winter weather forecast. We'll look at summer as well, but winter's the next big season that we all like to know. Are we going to get snow here in Tennessee? I have to say that the almanac was on it. We had one of the bigger snows we've had in Tennessee in a very long time last year. And what does the Old Farmer's Almanac say about this time around?
For winter, we're projecting that temperatures are going to be warmer than normal, but you're still going to have some cold spells late November, from late January into early February, and then yet again in late February. Precipitation for your area of the country is predicted to be above normal, which is the opposite of most of the country. Looks like March is probably going to be your wettest month of the season, and you can expect some snow to start as early as November.
So is it, a lot of times we get, very cold rains wintertime. Does it look like we're looking at more rain with some chances of snow, or do we have a good chance of maybe a big snow or two? I noticed that the cold and snowy area is just right from Kentucky through the Midwest there.
Right. So, since the temperatures, it's a very odd section because with the temperatures being warmer than normal, but you're still going to have more precipitation than normal. It's going to be some snow. It's going to mostly be wet, but it's, again, it's bucking the trend of the rest of the country. So depending on what you're into, maybe you go somewhere else.
Correct, correct. So, does this look like an overall snowier year across the United States, or are we expecting maybe less snow?
I think most of the country is expecting less snow. Which is really funny because last year our map was so white because we do it by color. So, the white areas are the areas that are going to be snowier than usual. And it was a very unfun map. It was mostly white. This year, there's very little white and there's a lot of swaths of blue, and the greenish color is for the wet areas. So, it's very different from last year.
Also noticed the Northeast, which has had kind of a dry spell in terms of seeing snow and big snows over the past several years. Looking at a milder, maybe dry winter.
Yeah, our area, we're in the Northeast, is gonna be like much of the country. We're gonna have below average snow. We're gonna have above average temperatures. That I know it says mild on the map, but that's not interpreted as warm. It just means temperatures will be above normal. So for us, January average temperature might be 28. So if it's 32, that's above normal, but it certainly isn't warm.
Exactly. That's very true. Looks like the ski resorts maybe out west will have a good year though.
Yeah, it looks like the Rockies and then the Western Ohio Valley and then Central and Southern Appalachia, they're all expected to have higher than normal snow.
Sarah, what goes into putting together a forecast like this and with the accuracy that you do? Who works on that? I'm sure it's more than just one person, probably a team of folks who do that.
The entire editorial team will work on it. There's about six of us, I believe. I lose count. And we do work with meteorologists. So they've got our proprietary formula, which is based on solar science, climatology, and meteorology, which is what our founder devised back in 1792. Obviously, now we've got science at our hands with right at our fingertips on, so we can use modern scientific calculations. We're using different numbers than they were using in 1792, obviously, because we've got a warming climate. But it's still based on those three scientific disciplines.
Very interesting. And this is work that probably takes, it's not like something you can knock out in a day, I wouldn't think, right?
No, it takes us months to do the weather. We started on it pretty early because there's very a lot of editing and reiterations and going back and forth and getting things fine-tuned. So it's a process.
Well, Sarah, the Old Farmer's Almanac is out now. Where are the best places that we can find the almanac?
You can find the Old Farmer's Almanac anywhere books and magazines are sold. It's also available on our website, almanac.com, and like everything else, you can find it at Amazon.
Absolutely. Well, great to have you along with us. I always look forward to this interview every year and appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Oh, thanks. It was my pleasure.
Joining us today from the Old Farmer's Almanac, Sarah Peralt, the managing editor. Hope you enjoyed this conversation today here on News Radio WGNS.